Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the first webinar of Paraspar Special Lecture Series. To inaugurate this set of lectures, we have Dr. Sam Pitroda, who will speak on and about his book, Redesign the World, A Call to Global Action. Our speaker today needs no introduction. Nevertheless, we would like to briefly introduce him for the audience to know about his remarkable contributions. Dr. Sam Pitroda is an internationally respected telecom inventor, entrepreneur, development thinker, and policymaker, credited with having laid the foundation of India's telecommunication and technology revolution in the 1980s. Dr. Pitroda has been a leading campaigner to help bridge the global digital divide. During his tenure as advisor to Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi, Dr. Pitroda has led 6 technology missions related to telecommunication, water, literacy, immunization, dairy production, and oil seeds. He was also the founder and first chairman of India's Telecom Commission. In this plural roles, Dr. Pitroda helped revolutionize India's development philosophies and policies with a focus on access to technology as a key to social change. As a way to induce the second phase of India's technology revolution, in 2005, Dr. Pitroda headed India's National Knowledge Commission to provide a blueprint of reform for the knowledge-related institutions and infrastructure for the 21st century in the country. Recently, Dr. Pitroda served as advisor to the Prime Minister of India on public information infrastructure and innovation with the rank of Cabinet Minister. He served as the chairman of the Smart Grid Task Force as well as the committees to reform public broadcasting, modernize railways, deliver e-governance and other development activities. Dr. Pitroda is the founding chairman of 5 non-profit organizations, a founding commissioner of the United Nations Broadband Commission for Digital Development, and chairman of the ITU's Empowering Development Board that looks to empower developing countries with the use of mobile technology. In addition, Dr. Pitroda is a serial entrepreneur, having started several companies in the United States. He holds around 20 honorary PhDs, close to 100 worldwide patents, and has published 5 books, numerous papers, and lectured all over the world. We are indeed very glad to listen to you today. May I now request Dr. Pitroda to deliver his lecture.
Thank you very much. Friends, greetings from Chicago. It is indeed a special privilege and honor for me to be with all these bright young people in Bangalore. I'm delighted that we'll be spending about an hour on my book. I'm told that some of you have already read it. So I'd like to give you a quick overview before we open up for a broader conversation. During Corona crisis, like all of us, I was locked up for almost 18 months in self-quarantine at home in Chicago. And this gave me chance in the first month to review and reflect on my own life and the journey I had, along with the journey of the technology, my own family, and the overall ecosystem. During that process, I realized that the world was last designed just about the time I was born. I was born in 1942, 80 years ago, in a small little tribal village in Orissa, a place called Titilagad. No electricity, no water, no radio, no telephones, no pharmacy, no doctor, no nothing. I was born during British Raj. So I've seen the independence. I've seen death of Gandhiji. I've seen lots and lots of interesting things in life in the last 80 years. In fact, the transistor was born 5 years after I was born. Since there were no schools in Orissa, my parents decided to send me to school in Baroda. Near Baroda, there was a small little village called Vallabh Vidyanagar where I studied in school and learned a great deal about Gandhian values. Then went to college in Baroda, came to America, got a degree in physics in India, studied electrical engineering in America, and used vacuum tubes in the early days, then transistors, then some of the integrated circuits, TTL logic. I've seen the birth of microprocessor. And this journey in technology really gave me a very different perspective. Then I realized that the world that was designed in 1942, predominantly led by the US, which gave birth to UN, World Bank, NATO, WTO, WHO, GDP, GNP, IMF, all of these institutions were created. And that design is something we all have been following, knowingly or unknowingly. And that has created a rule-based system in the world. That design was based on democracy, human rights, capitalism, consumption, and military. Then world was bipolar. You had US and you had Soviet Union. Soviet Union followed almost exactly opposite ideas to US, except in military. But the US design prevailed. World was in ruin. Japan had to be rebuilt. Europe had to be rebuilt. And everyone followed US lead. India did not matter then because India was still a British colony. China was very poor to be on the table. And Africa really didn't matter. So a handful of countries decided the destiny of the world going forward. Right after the design, several things happened. First, the entire world got decolonized in a short span of 25 years, led by the movement that Gandhiji launched in India. Then China could rise to a level no one ever thought China could do it. In the process, Soviet Union fell apart. Technology became pervasive. Benefits of technology started to reach other parts of the world. In the process, inequality increased, where very few people became very rich and lots of people remained poor. Then 9/11 changed everything in America. 9/11, to some extent, was a response to a unipolar world. And finally, COVID-19 put an entire world to halt. No one ever thought that a small little virus detected in the middle of nowhere would really put global economy to grind. Corona crisis tells us that we are all interconnected, interwoven, interrelated, interdependent. What affects in one part of the world affects everybody. And as a result, it is clear that there are only two things that matter in life. One, planet, and two, people. Planet is in pain because of global warming, environmental blunders, attack on our oceans, forest, animals, insects, environment, air, water. People are in pain because the development has not been delivered to a large number of people. Many are hungry, have no shelter, lack of access to education, health. And now, mainly because of hyperconnectivity, we have new possibilities. For the first time in the human history, we are all connected. What does this connectivity mean? Hyperconnectivity is an opportunity where distance is dead, time is instant. And in this kind of environment, information and knowledge gets democratized. Implementation is easy at decentralized level, and many of the services can be demonetized. Hyperconnectivity is about content and context. For the first time, the entire world is connected. Almost connected. How do we use this connectivity to take humanity to the next level? And that led me to believe that it is important to analyze the last design. Last design did pretty well for 70 years. It lifted millions out of poverty. Peace has prevailed. Technology has reached a large number of people. But at the same time, many global problems have not been addressed. We spend today $2 trillion a year on defense, military, when we know that for $200 billion a year, we can eliminate hunger completely. We give lip service to global warming for the last 20 years, and we haven't done anything substantial. Leadership today is more focused on geopolitical equation, military hardware, trade, economy, and markets. There is hardly any discussion on global issues related to hunger, poverty, non-violence. And this is an opportunity to really redesign the world. But it's not easy. Who will listen? Why would anybody listen? Because those who are in power are milking the system. They have no need to change. And those who have need to change have no voice in the system. And this is the challenge we are all faced with today. So the key question is, what is new design? So when I look at the first design's five pillars, democracy, human rights, capitalism, consumption, and military, I felt it is better to focus and see if we can rebuild some of these and really take it forward more as an evolutionary design than revolutionary. I believe democracy needs to be taken to inclusion. In many democracies today, institutions are broken. Scientific mindset doesn't exist. And the role of civil society has been undermined. Democracies need to be strengthened by strengthening independent institutions. By taking decision-making further down, especially in countries like India, to district level. Centralization is not effective in a democratic system. It is not about vote once every 5 years. It is about active participation of the community to decide what is good for the community. It is not about nationalizing things. It is about localizing things, using local talent. Small is beautiful. Network SMEs to scale, create local jobs. And you need, according to me, the existing system to be turned upside down. Two, human rights are not good enough. We need to be able to provide human needs, because today we can produce anything. The key is what is that we want to produce? And for whom do we want to produce? Do we want to produce only for people who can afford to buy, or for people who need it? We today live in an economy of surplus and not economy of scarcity. But we tend to think as if we live in economy of scarcity. Three, capitalism hasn't done well for everybody. We need new economy. We need circular economy, regenerative economy. Economy that develops from bottom up and not top down. It doesn't help if we create 100 more billionaires. What matters is what have we done to our poor? We cannot celebrate unicorns as the success of a country. We have to really look at people at the bottom of the economic pyramid and see what we have done. So when I say everything has to be turned upside down, I'm very serious about what we think as a success may not be a success in the long term. Then the whole idea of consumption doesn't work in the long run. Everybody today wants to be like America. We cannot consume the way America has been consuming in the last 30, 40 years. We need focus on conservation and sustainability. We meaning the world. We need durable products and not disposable products. We need a whole different mindset about sustainability. And finally, I hope that as a human civilization, we have matured to a point we can sort our differences across the table. And we don't need to build supersonic weapons to threaten each other. World has gone crazy in many ways in building weapons. To impress each other, to threaten each other, when we know we can sort our differences across the table. So I believe the new design has to really move away from the old to really build inclusive societies. India is not inclusive. America is not inclusive because we have Black Lives Matter in America. We have caste, religion, other differences in India. And it is true in every society. We got to learn to respect people with diversity, differences. We got to give everybody dignity, respect, to be able to bring best in people. And none of this is rocket science. Gandhiji, in a very different way, talked about all of these things that touched the lives of millions and millions. In a sense, we need Gandhian ideas back on the table. Unfortunately, during the last design, Gandhian ideas were not well understood, respected, because we were still a colony. If we had followed those ideas then, the world would be very different. You will not have the kind of inequality you have in the world. You will have a little more justice, respect for other people. I am very worried about what is going on in the world, what is going on in India. I am very concerned as to what we think is right versus what we think is wrong is all mixed up. We have lost moral fabric. We have lost character. Everybody is searching for quick fixes. Everybody has personal agenda. And public agenda is always on the back burner. I think it is time for young people to realize that their world will have to be very different. They need to demand change. They need to articulate, discuss, debate these issues. And many are doing it. It's not that it's not happening. But I hope it could happen at a different pace. Time is running out on global warming. Time is running out on poverty, hunger, injustice. Time is running out on many, many key issues. Today, with hyperconnectivity, we can expedite the process of development. But we wind up using hyperconnectivity for many different personal gains. Look at what is going on with Facebook today. Look at some of these large corporations with $1 trillion valuations. What are they doing? What is their contribution? How are they using hyperconnectivity? What are they promoting? These are some of the challenges today that young people need to really question. I know it's not easy to really think of a redesign, but all I can do is begin a new conversation. If young people begin new conversation, maybe things will begin to change. Today's global conversation to some extent is rubbish. It is all about geopolitical equations, markets, as I said earlier, economy, trade, and power. Today there are two designs in the world. One is the American design to take the old design forward, and second is the Chinese design with emphasis on Belt and Road Initiative. Both of these designs are based on command and control. Superpower, leadership, military strength. What we need is a third design, which is based on collaboration, cooperation, co-creation, which is based on networking of nations, which is based on bottom-up development. And that design will have to focus on the five new parameters: inclusion, human needs, new economy, sustainability and consumption, and non-violence. How do we get this message to people in power? Unfortunately, people in power have only one agenda, and that is to increase their power, strengthen their position, create more wealth for themselves at the cost of everybody else, including environment. And that circle has to be broken. I hope a lot of bright young people like you all can give some serious thought to it. I don't have all the answers. All I am saying, it's about time to question the last design and propose a new design that is more human, focus more on justice, equality, dignity and respect for diversity. And we have the tools today to do new things, and we must learn to do new things. With this, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity. And I hope we can open up for a broader conversation now. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Pietroda. Since this webinar series, we wanted to focus on the students of Indian Institute of Science. So we thought it would be good if the discussion is conducted by the students themselves. Absolutely. So we have a set of students who would conduct the questions and also the discussion. I would like them to take over from here.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself, the students, please.
How many students are there right now?
I can't make out, but I think most of them are students of IIC. We have 55 participants just now.
Okay, good.
Broadly, it will be around 30 students would be there.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Hello, sir. Yes. My name is Ahmed Sheikh. And yes, right at the outset, I'd like to thank you for your speech and especially for writing your book. I must say it was a fascinating read, one that I'll probably remember for a long time. So maybe to kick things off with a few questions. I guess maybe the first question I had was, the more I read your book, the more I definitely wanted to believe in the philosophy of the book and the philosophy of really believing in nonviolence and the five pillars, and it really resonated. Though I had this one question where time and again history has showed us when a large group of people, you know, really do believe in something, you often have fringe elements, you know, that are more selfish, that, you know, look to gain more power. In examples like companies like Wirecard, Theranos, Enron, OneCoin, the list goes on. Even Wall Street, Bernie Madoff himself. How do we stop this from happening? Because each and every one of these figures seems so benevolent from the outside. We all want you to believe in them. They all seem to embody all five pillars of this book, but at the end of the day, they turned out to cheat the world for billions, most recently even the company Nikola. So how would you say we watch out for them? What would you say is the best way to avoid this?
I think we need better surveillance. We need better openness. We need better transparency, which we have not built in the past. Okay. We get impressed with the facade. You know, we get impressed with bazaars, you know, a nice suit, and, you know, you take many cases here. You see the people in front are con artists. And we don't do enough good checking on their values. At the end of the day in life, values matter. What you believe in. You know, do you believe in truth? Do you believe in trust? Do you believe in love? You know, I mean, if you and I connected, I don't need to worry about our differences. I need to worry about our fundamentals. Okay, people don't build trust. People work on mistrust, lies. Look at the lies that go on in India today. It is amazing that people believe these lies. They promote these lies. They join to promote these lies. You know, so ultimately, we need to build a society which is based on trust, love, and not differences. Today, love has been converted to hate. Truth has been converted to lies. Trust has been converted to mistrust. And these are the people who are flourishing. Okay? And that is the problem. And it's not going to be easy, believe me. You will always find people who would like shortcut, who would like to cheat the system to gain quickly. It'll happen. The question is, how can we minimize it? We can't get rid of it. So we have to try our best. It's a journey. There'll be, if enough of us believe in truth, trust, and love, it'll be there. If enough of us don't believe in it, it won't be there. Okay? Thanks,
sir, I feel as much as you're emphasizing on trust and having that belief, I think it's also important that you need to be vigilant and aware of all the narcissistic and manipulative trends that are coming up everywhere.
Agree. Right. Completely agree.
Yeah.
And are we using big data and analytics for that? Or we are using big data and analytics and all this stuff for control? You know, I think it's up to us. And look at what goes on in social media. Attacks on people, fabricated, you know, the basic problem in social media is unauthenticated behavior. When Ahmed says, I am Ahmed, then I take responsibility for what I said. I respect that. But when somebody wants to hide behind veil and attack everybody on every issue, and there are 500 people who gang up on you, people think, oh my God, social media is attacking you. It's really not social media attacking you. It's a bunch of crooks who are hiding behind who are attacking you.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it happens to me. Many times my wife would say, oh my God, look at all these people. I said, they don't exist. So why worry about that? Don't pay attention to them. But that goes on. What do we do?
Yeah, thanks for the answer. So I'd like to go ahead with the next question. So I'm Sukriya. I'm an undergraduate student at IISc, pursuing a major in chemistry with a minor in biology. So my question to you would be about, you talk about hyperconnectivity and the way it is going to change the educational systems and the innovation in education that is needed. So in that regard, what would be your comments and opinions on, say, for example, the you know, the publishing sector, in the sense that about the digital books and soft copies, and compared to the hard copies of books and the conventional libraries that we have? How would you expect the new design of the world to incorporate it, the concept of a library and things like that?
I'm convinced that libraries are to some extent old concept. Of course, you need a place for people to come together and have a cup of coffee and have a conversation. That is good. But for me to be able to check out a book and go to check out and somebody says, no, somebody else has checked it out, so you'll get it after 2 weeks. That is obsolete. Okay. I mean, a friend of mine called Carl Malamud has put some billions of documents on internet. Okay. Internet archives has 600,000 books from India. Okay. I can get it online. Why do I need to go to library? But there is another reason to go to library, that there's a little peace and quiet. I may have a cup of coffee with somebody who is more intelligent than I am, and I learn something from them. Okay, but I think the fundamental question that I have about education and technology is that learning really requires three things: motivation, time, and content. Am I motivated to learn something? If I am, nobody can stop me. If I'm not motivated, nobody can start me. If I'm motivated, am I willing to spend the time it takes to learn something? It may take 5 hours to learn something and I'm willing to spend only 1 hour. I won't learn. If I'm willing to spend the time it takes to learn something, there is enough material available on internet. The question is, has anyone really curated that? Today, when you Google something, you get 2 million documents. What do you do with it? It's like giving me 5,000 paintings and said, look at it. No, I want to look at only 50, the best one. Let somebody else curate it. So you need curation. In addition, personally, I would like our education to make you self-learner. Our education today does not make you self-learner. I learn even today at the age of 80. I'm 80 years old. I learn every day something new. And then I realize how little I know about everything. You know, oh my God, there is so much to know about marine life and biology and psychology and philosophy and anthropology and you name it. And then you say, my God, in 80 years, you have learned so little. So how do we make somebody a self-learner who says, I'm going to continue to learn? Ideally, I would like education system which makes me self-learner by the time I'm 12 or 15. And then leave it to me. Whatever I want to learn, I don't learn what my parents want me to learn. I want to learn what I want to learn. It could be math, it could be physics, it could be marine biology, it could be how to make best wine in the world. Okay. That is the challenge with education. Today, if Henry Ford landed up on this earth, the only place he will find production system is in education. Everybody goes to the school, same course, same textbook, same exam. You know, then you know you exit and they give you a certificate. It's a manufacturing plant. Okay. It is not to get best out of you and really tailor make to each individual learner. Today, it is a factory. And the factory gets to be decided by somebody sitting in Delhi in India of what should be taught in some district. Come on, give me a break. You know, who the hell this guy in Delhi who decides what to teach? Okay, how much to pay a teacher? It's all broken. Everything is broken, believe me. Okay, we got to turn everything upside down and we celebrate these things. And we think they're great. And we think, oh my God, what a wonderful decision on education policy. Okay. It's all bogus. But poor students can't say that. Look at kids go through their exams and the pressure and the, you know, test and all this stuff is a manufacturing process.
Excuse me, sir. So you said that, by 12 to 15 years old, I should be able to be a self-learner and then decide what I should do. And that is, I believe, what you think is, you know, better approach. So why do you think that is a better approach? What evidence do you have that it
would
lead to a better approach?
I have no evidence. It's my gut feeling. And sometimes, you know, gut feelings are more important. Don't ask me why. Okay. I make decisions, lots of decisions in life based on gut feelings. I can't have all the data all the time to make the decision I need to make. I wish I could. You know, I made millions of decisions in life, you know, and it's based on little information, not accurate information, unfortunately. And that's what life is. It may not be 12 or 15, it may be 18. I don't know that. Okay. I just said 12 or 15. Okay. Because I know based on my life, by the time I was 12 or so, my mind was all set what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it, right or wrong. Okay. And somebody could say, well, it happened to me at 16. Fine. No argument. Okay. But how do I make somebody a self-learner who from inside feels motivated to learn every day? That's the point. That's what education system should be all about. Say it again.
Sorry,
I can't hear you.
Oh, I think that was a mistake on someone's part. I should say, sir, that I wholeheartedly agree with what you just said. Having recently completed my bachelor's in engineering, it was indeed a mad run to monetary success rather than gain. And I feel it has to do with the environment that one grows up in, where it's not a sense that we don't want to be creative, it's that nobody around us is created, very often including our teachers. I guess it's something that has to come down, like you said, right from the top, where it's got to be. I see some of that in the new NEP policy, but even that is so confusing to read at times. It's like it's written by three different people and it's all a muddled mess right now.
But you know, policy is one thing and implementation is something else.
Absolutely.
All our policies are great. Okay. Comparatively. But look at the implementation. See, the big hope I have is Indian talent. Believe me. And I'm not saying it for the sake of saying it. I have personally benefited from it. When we started CDOT, CDAC, 40 years ago, these things succeeded only because there were lots of young, talented Indian boys and girls from all kinds of background, bright, dedicated, idealist, committed, nationalist. Unfortunately, when they get into the system sucks them up. Their idealism gets distracted.
Mm-hmm. Sir, I believe it's also got something to do with how the culture is set at micro level, right? For example, if you take IAC for example, you have a lot of labs under different professors, and at that micro level, how the culture is set and how the students and the interaction between students and professors, how it goes on at that micro level, and how the students are motivated to come up with different ideas or pursue their research. So I think it's not just, we can't just blame the hierarchy that's at the higher level, but it's also about how we are, it's also about being conscious at the micro level as to how we set that culture for growth.
Yeah, but it's same thing that works at micro level, works at macro level. Okay. Our teachers are not trained to be mentors. They are trained to be teachers. They are supposed to be teach and not mentor. Nobody has taught them how to mentor. You know, there's a larger issue here is, and that a friend of mine who was a great psychiatrist in America, Indian guy, Dr. Prakash Desai, who was a very well-known psychiatrist, died a few years ago, childhood friend of mine, used to say that there are four important words in India that dictate everything. One, man, apman, soman, and abhiman. Everybody's hung up on these things because self-esteem is very fragile. Teacher gets hurt very easily. Teacher cannot get hurt. Teacher has to have a very high self-esteem because his job is to nurture students, love them, care for them, build them with team spirit and all. But they get hurt themselves, okay, because they are not trained to be mentors. So there are issues at all level. It is not just in universities. In political circles, same issues. Okay. In government, same issues. In factories, same issues. A lot of these things start at the family level. We are very hierarchical and feudal in many ways. Okay. We are not good team players. We are good solo players. Indians don't have orchestra. They have solo players. There is a big difference. So there are lots of issues. The question is, within given situation, how do we make best out of it to really build inclusive society, to bring best in everybody? How do we treat our women? How do we treat our children? These are very complex issues. And it begins at home. Violence begins at home. Let's not forget that. Okay, it begins on the street, in the neighborhood. How do we treat our neighbor? Yeah. How do we respect somebody who is different from us in terms of religion, caste, color, food, language? You know, rather than saying, what a great idea to be different. I will learn something from him or her. We look for similarities. I'm one of those who look for differences. What a boring thing it would be to have everybody like me. You know, I want diversity.
Thanks for your response. Now I think we'll go with some other hands. So for the audience who are here, we'd request you to put your hands up.
15 more minutes, if you don't mind, because I have another one.
Yeah, sure. So audience, you can please put your hands up in case you want to ask something. So I saw a hand from Nikita. So Nikita, you can go ahead.
Hi, thanks for doing this. I'm Nikita Ketuwase. I graduate from a biology major. I enjoyed reading your book, but I do have a question about the five principles that you suggested. And you said you derived this from the last time they redefined the world. But I had a question regarding that. If you look at the United Nations, the Security Council has 5 victories, and these 5 countries have been covered ever since then for 75 years. So I wouldn't say that that design was inclusive. So what your thought on that, and what you should suggest, say if a replacement was to be built, if you were to build United Nations today, and especially because there are non-democratic countries, and in a way to ensure that they do progress towards democracy, you need to engage in conversation with such countries. But if you impose democracy, you can't get them to come to the table and have a conversation.
A lot has been written on reforming UN. A lot of people inside and outside have commented on it, including me, in many forums. I was once invited to give a talk at World Bank, where all the World Bank executives were there, and I sort of talked about, you know, reforming World Bank. Okay. We all have our ideas. Not that I have answers, but can we put together a team and say, okay, how do we reform UN? and here is a blueprint and let's do it. Just to give an idea, you know, and it's nothing to do with religion, okay, but let's look at a little broadly. If we have over a billion Muslims and over a billion Hindus, why aren't they on Security Council? Why isn't any Muslim country on Security Council? Okay, nobody is asking that. And then you expect that they have your respect. How can they have your respect? You've not treated them well. Okay. As an example, now you can argue about it. Okay. So the structure set up today are set up by people in position of power to preserve their power and position. It is not really set up to give justice to humanity. It is not set up to preserve our planet and our people. Okay. I mean, look at all the discussions at G20 and G7. Everybody goes there as a head of marketing. And when the prime minister or president comes back home, everybody claps, oh, you sold this idea. Oh, you made a deal on defense. I mean, come on, give me a break. Okay. But that's how the world is. Because, oh, my prime minister did such a great job. He was very impressive. Okay, what are you trying to do? Okay. And media just goes wild and everybody thinks, oh, there is a media discussion. What a great impression our prime minister made on this guy and that guy. It's all bogus. Okay. But how do you tell all these people? Because they think they are right. You know. So I think that's why there is a need to have a new conversation. And that new conversation only you all can initiate. Okay. If you sit tight and don't do anything, nothing is going to happen, believe me. Our generation can do it. Okay. It is your future that is at stake. And sometimes people like me feel responsible for it. Okay. That why didn't we do this when we were 40 or 50? We had the chance to do it, but we couldn't do it. Okay. We did a little bit here and there. I did my bit on telecom, IT, technology missions, you know, but I couldn't change the structure of the system. Okay. And then there was no hyperconnectivity. Now I think you have huge potential with hyperconnectivity. Okay. And you guys are best of the best in terms of, you know, minds in India. The fact that you could get into this institution itself is a great testimonial. And if you don't think, who else will think? Okay. Some flunky in some local, you know, third-rate college is not going to be able to do that, perhaps. Perhaps. Okay.
Okay, so now we have a hand from Sushmita. Sushmita Janakiraman. Sushmita, go ahead.
Hi, sir. So yes, I read your book on redesigning the world. And the chapter on conservation and sustainability caught my attention. So I feel conservation and sustainability comes with a cost, right? For a simple example, like if you take all the day-to-day goods, you have a lot of small businesses that are cropping up everywhere that follow sustainable practices and plastic-free packaging for, say, home essentials, stationery, sanitary napkins, and whatnot. But then these are not available off the shelf. They're not, you know, easily available for common people. You will have to put extra efforts or you'll have to order them online and you have to pay additional shipping prices that come with it. So there are two aspects to this. One thing is people, not everyone cares so much that they want to go sustainable, but they don't realize that it's going to affect them indirectly. And secondly, I feel the government or the higher authorities will have to come up with policies supporting these local businesses and sustainable practices, and they'll have to start taking climate change and conservation seriously. Otherwise, 10 years down the lane, you're going to have a lot more pandemics and epidemics of this sort. You don't even know what might come.
Completely agree, Susmita. I agree with you. So what do we do?
Exactly. One thing is that we need sensitization.
There is a price to be paid for everything. Yeah. Nothing comes free. Okay. If we are not willing to pay the price, we'll have to face the consequences. Okay. That's all.
Okay. But it should be a collective effort.
It will. That's what I was just going to say. Each one of us will have to do it. And you said collective effort. Agree? Okay. You know the answer.
Yes.
Okay. The question is, are you going to speak up in your neighborhood? Are you going to make an issue out of it when you see injustice, or you are going to keep quiet? Okay. Issue is, are you going to be championing this in your family, friends? If you're not, it's not going to happen. This is the point. Each one of us will have to be a change agent. If you are not willing to be a change agent, it is not going to happen. You say, I read a book, I like it, I agree with it, but I'm going to go do the same thing I've been doing. Then nothing is going to happen. If there are 100 Susmitas of the world, something will happen. So you have to be a change agent. You have to talk about this in your neighborhood, in your family, in your community, in your ecosystem. And if enough of you do that, things will change. Okay.
Agreed.
Okay. We have 5 more minutes.
Yeah, so we can take a question from Suresh KK. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for your insightful conversation, Mr. Petruda. I'd seen you, I think, many years back. One question is, you really touched upon the point of, how the education system is, how the teachers are, what we are learning. You are learning actually something which maybe your parents have told. And these are all actually not new. And of course, it is a little bit of the gravity is maybe more in India because of our Eastern culture. Maybe West, it is a little more better. But fundamentally, when I look at it, even a small device when we buy, it comes with a thick user manual how to operate this. Maybe the human beings does not know how to operate ourselves. And maybe the reason that we do not know what we are supposed to do. If at all I get my user manual also, I do not know how to read. It comes with me, but I don't know how to read. And if at all I try to read, maybe my parents replace me with my, one of the bright kids user manual with me. And finally, I get lost in life. So rather than learning maths and English and then stuff like that, and then as you mentioned that at the age of 12, some people get it, but there are people, even at the age of 60, that do not get it what they want. How can we include learning about yourself and reading your user manual and do something create wonderful? Because you mentioned about motivation. That comes when you know that what you are. How to basically imbibe this in humanity as a course, maybe the fundamental course. And then once you learn that by learning cycle, you become an expert and it become a habit for you. And the non-violence, everything comes with it.
I agree with you 100%. In fact, I have 2 kids. One went to Harvard, got an MBA, MIT engineer, and a daughter who went to London Business School and got an MBA, and she was economist from Michigan. And when they got an MBA, which cost $200,000 to get it, I realized that nobody teaches them a course on self. I would like to teach a course on self. What is self? How do you make a good self? self that is respectful, disciplined, ethical, moral, self that is analytical, self that is creative, you know, self that is rooted in fundamental values. And that's what you're talking about. You're talking about a manual for an individual. Why do we have largest number of prisoners in America, in a highly educated country like this? Okay. Why do people take so much drug? Okay. And then we worry about drug and violence and all this stuff. Okay. Look at all the issue going on some little, you know, drug today in India on TV 24 hours a day. Okay. I mean, it's a bogus stuff. It's all bogus. Okay. Some little kid took a drug. Fine. I don't agree or disagree. Let the court decide. Okay. The whole nation doesn't need to focus on it. Okay. Can we put that much energy on hunger, poverty, problems of rural in India? No. Why don't we do that? So I agree with you that we need a manual on self. But it's there. It's there in our culture. It's there in our tradition. It's in our family. It's there in Gandhian ideas. Okay, it's all there. Do we want to believe it? You know, it's not rocket science. At the end of the day, it consists of 10 basic ideas, according to me. And you can add or subtract few. One, truth. Trust. I trust Suresh for what he says. I don't need to investigate Suresh. You know, if Suresh says, look, I have a degree in this, I trust him. I don't need to see his certificate. Okay. How do you build that trust between people? Because trust brings love. So truth, trust, love. Democracy. Equal rights. Suresh has same thing, same rights as I have. Okay. Then justice. Democracy, diversity, inclusion, respect for other human beings. There are 10 things that you need to understand in life. And then everything flows from that. These are the values. If you don't believe in these values, don't practice these values, you'll have a tough time. Okay, that's what Suresh is saying. I agree. But nobody teaches you all that. You know, no business school teaches you how to build self.
Okay. They also do not know, I think, because they also would have not read their user manual. Even a statistics about Harvard University says that 80% of the students after passing out, they do not even know that what they are supposed to do with their degree.
Suresh, what do you do?
We have actually set up a special project in Indian Institute of Science for Government of India, which is basically India Urban Data Exchange. We take all the national data, bring it to a national data platform, and share the data.
Pardon? Are you a professor there?
No, I basically came from industry to lead the project.
Why don't we write a manual? Let's do it. Okay.
I can do it for data, but when it comes to the user manual of human beings, I also do not have much knowledge. So because I have not learned, I'm not trained.
You have enough talent at Bangalore Institute of Science to be able to do that. Okay. Let's start with the first draft, even sure. If it is pages. Okay, it's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah, you have inspired me actually today to do that.
But I can connect with you. Connect with me.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, How do I connect with you, sir?
Sam@sampitroda.com.
Okay.
Sam@sampitroda.com. PITRODA.
Okay.
Okay. I would love to have a chat with you.
Sure. Definitely, I have something more to discuss with you on the same lines. That's fine. Thanks, everybody.
I got to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
We can have another session sometime if you wish. We'll have a longer chat. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Pitroda. So I would request Nikita to present the vote of thanks shortly.
Okay. Nikita, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Nikita, I can hear you now.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. And we really appreciate the opportunity to interact with you and to get your thoughts on some of the questions we had after reading your book. And it was truly our pleasure to go through your book, and we're looking forward to the complete release. And additionally, we would also like to thank the Office of Communication for setting this up on behalf of the students of IISc. Thank you, Bitasta ma'am, and Professor Kaushal Verma for this. And thank you everyone for joining us today.
Thank you. Remain connected, okay? Love you.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks, Suresh. Don't forget to connect with me.
Yeah, sure, sir. Thank you so much. I'll connect with you.
Thank you, sir.